Welcome to another episode of the C-List Villains Podcast, your cultivators of the comic culture. I'm your host, E-Man, tonight. And tonight's a special night, you guys, because we get the immaculate return. We get the immaculate re-arrival of our leader, the man who started this all, AJ, the comic collector, is with us tonight.
What's going on, everyone? Good evening, everyone. Good evening.
Good seeing you again.
You too, man.
I love it. I remember I saw you at San Diego Comic Con, and you were hustling. This guy hustles at San Diego Comic Con. It's like no fun. It's all work. So,
but it pays off, you know. It pays off.
It does. I see you posting. Yeah. Like you're like, oh, I got this. I got that. So just real fast, you know, give me a grade for Comic-Con 2023, you know, without the big panels and whatnot. How was it for you this year?
In all honesty, I would say it was still fun. You know, it's a lot of work, a lot of standing in line, but there was also a couple of letdowns. I would say the year before was a little more fun as far as getting the merch that, you know, I wanted. But, you know, I still enjoy it. It's still San Diego Comic-Con. But it did, you know, honestly, I don't do like the Hall H panels. Mm-hmm. So I didn't notice like it wasn't a bummer for me. You know, gotcha. I actually tried to get to the Hall H and I was hoping that maybe I can get on the podium area. Uh-huh. and like post a live stream and say, like, hey, I'm doing a panel at Hall H, come by, but
I see what you do. It. I say, yeah. Hey, look, dreams happen, brother, because you know what? That's the dream for the C-List Villains, to make it into Hall H one of these years.
Me and John, at the end of the day on Sunday, we try to get into Hall H and we're like, let's just do a quick like live stream and say we're doing a panel.
That would have been awesome. All right. Well, allow me to introduce our guest for this evening. He got a break working with Jim Lee after his book Tail Weaver was picked up by Wildstorm in the early 2000s. He's worked with industry titans on the pages of popular comics such as Spawn, Batman and Robin, and the Green Lantern. He's illustrated cards for the tabletop collecting game Magic the Gathering, and you can catch him on his current project with Frank Miller on Ronin Book 2, Philip Tan. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Hi, everyone.
Thanks for having me. No, thank you, man.
Yes, thank you for coming by and hanging out. We do appreciate it, Philip. Philip, man, this is the first time
you guys were with us at San Diego Comic Con.
What was that?
I went to your booth.
Comic Con, yeah.
I went to your booth. I was, you know what? I was gonna. I went there early because I wanted to pick up, and this is on me. I was planning on picking up the blind box.
Oh, what did I got to say hi and meet you there? I mean, I don't recall. I'm sorry.
Vaguely, I've actually met you a couple times.
Okay,
all right. I even met you the first time I actually met you. I have to say I didn't know it was you. You were covering. I think it was Ryan Benjamin's booth at WonderCon.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And you were just drawing, and I was like, "Is Ryan Benjamin here?" And you're like, "No, I'm just watching his booth." And I'm like, "Oh man, that's a really cool sketch." And then I'm like, "Are you an artist?" And I'm like, "Yeah, my name is Philip Tan." And I'm like, "Wait, you're Philip Tan?" And I'm like, I did not know who you like. I knew your name, but I never knew who you know. You don't see too many artists like their face, you know. And that was my first time meeting you. And I'm like, oh,
it's like a football player, Philip, right? Yeah. Like everyone knows the football player's number, their helmet, right?
Exactly.
Their build. But when you see them without the helmet off, you're like, wait, who's that? Oh, dude, that's, you know, that's Joe Montana. That's, you know, Ben Roethlisberger. No, that right there. That's Philip Tan.
You see, you're gonna be failing the analogy because I actually don't know anything about football. the thing is, when you grow up in the Philippines, the only sport that's important for us is basketball.
See their faces in basketball, you know. The football, you don't see their faces
because of,
you know.
All right, I'm cutting you guys off. I'm sorry.
No, no, it's okay.
I even remember the sketch you were doing. It was a really badass Harley sketch. And I even asked, are you selling that? Are you just doodling that? And you said it was for a customer. And I'm like, and right there on the spot, I was like, are you taking any commissions? And you weren't doing any that weekend.
AJ's like, this is a, there's a term in the industry called fangirling. And AJ's extremely, I can tell AJ's really happy that you're on the show today, Philip.
Oh, I'm honored. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Well, before we get started, let me say what's going on and what's up with the chat real fast. Evil Fett cosplays in the house. Filipino time. Yes, we started a little late here, Evil Fett, but we are in the house. We have Blue Hellion Comics. Hi, folks. I hope all is well. Dan, now that you're here, everything is well. Namin, a comic book worm. Hello, guys. Hello, Namin. Thanks for coming by and hanging out with us, man. Look, Namin's, everyone's saying hi to Namin there, you know. Let's see who else. Oh, Ferdbert. Hey, Ferdbert, what's going on, brother? I'm glad that he's here. Seattle, though. He's a Seattle Seahawks fan. That's one thing I'm worried about right there. But it's all right. It's all right. We're not going to fault him for that. I'm most familiar with Mr. Tan's work on Magic the Gathering. I'd love to see a team up with Philip and Ron Spencer. We might have a question for you coming up regarding that later on there, Philip. Crazy Philip Tan is in the house. Bird the Nerd is extremely happy that you're in. So, Philip, man, let's go ahead and get some questions out of the way. Let's go ahead and start from the beginning. So, tell us how you got the idea for Teal Weaver and how Wildstorm picked it up. That's a story that I'm
That was a long time ago. I could be missing details, but basically it was, I was hanging out with Wilson's group. You know, he had this school back in the Philippines around since forever, you know. I mean, it was like 1997, 98 or something when that started. And he launched Stone around 1998 or 99. Yeah, you can tell I completely forgot already the timeline. Mm-hmm. But I joined the contest, and you know, he was launching the book with Brian Haberlin. He was back in the Philippines. I joined the contest, and I didn't win, but you know, I got to know his group of like instructors and his pupils and his talents. You know, Jerry Young Gillen, Gilbert Monsanto, and I started hanging out with them. But as time goes, I mean, you know, it wasn't really like, oh, you get better. You draw to a certain point that, okay, I'm going to find you a job. That's not what they do. And I just realized that, you know, it's not going to work if I just wait. So I went and, you know, pull whoever is not doing anything around, you know, around me, that's also hanging out with them. And we put together a story and a book. And that was Tail Weaver. It wasn't exactly what we, you know, what we begin, you know, eventually became something else. So I can't really claim that it's my whole thing. You have to, it's a product of everyone's decisions at that point. So it was something where, you know, I put the book together. Got the first, I think, an issue and something done, and Wills and Brian Haberlin, you know, I Wills showed it to Brian. Brian really liked it. Brian brought it to Wildstorm, and Johnny at that time, who was running Wildstorm for Jim, pick it up. So that's how it all started.
That's a good start.
Were you self-taught, or did you go to school?
I did go to school, but unless you consider drawing bathrooms and the doorknobs, because I'm an architecture graduate. So, okay. You know, everything else, you kind of have to just look at what you like, what you love, you know, comic books, all kinds of comic books, you know, Japanese manga. I mean, there was even a point where I loved all the martial arts comics from Hong Kong that my dad would bring home, and they were cheaper than American comic books in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I remember like an issue of when I started, I have to kind of like skip meals and save my money, because comics were overpriced over there, and around 1992-91, it was pretty much impossible for me to have any kind of allowance to buy that. So you save up lunch money and all this stuff, and it was, I think the dollar comic book would be, oh no, it started with $1.25, I think. And that was around when New Warriors and Guardians of the Galaxy by Jim Valentino started. Mm-hmm. And that would be like 35 pesos, I think.
Oh, wow.
And Hong Kong comics back then would be less than 15 pesos. So it was very cheap compared to American comics. But anyway, so I got exposed to a lot of different mediums. And obviously, there's a lot more access to anime, the older ones, that is,
right,
over there, because I think anime didn't really became big and accessible here until the 90s, right?
Yeah.
Late, that was my 90s impression.
I didn't grow up here, yeah, in the 90s, so I don't exactly know.
Yeah, I would say it started to creep up like mid 90s, and then once it got on like Cartoon Network, that's when it really started to
blow up. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, you went to the same school as my father, the University of Santo Tomas. And it's a little personal to me, you know, like I feel like we have a connection. Philip, you know, you went to the same school as my father. What was it like going to the Philippines, you know, learning architecture and then taking those ideas and bringing it over to comics?
I think colleges, I mean, unless there are specific skills like certain things in engineering, and to a certain degree architecture, but more specifically like anything that's medicine related, anything that involves human safety and health, mm-hmm, I think you need college. But everything else, I think you're in college to learn the discipline to get things done rather than the specific stuff.
I agree. Yeah.
Interesting.
But I don't think that, I mean, again, if I can redo my college life again, I'll still go to college, because without that, I would probably give up on half the things I attempt. You know?
Wow, that's a really good way of looking at it.
College forces you to force yourself when you do things to get things done. And that's a discipline that you have to learn when you're at an impressionable age around that time, rather than when you're 40. You know, those are things you don't just switch on and says, oh, I'm going to slack for the first 30 years of my life, and suddenly I'm going to be a hard worker. That doesn't work like
that. Right. Yeah. Wow. That's, oh man. Philip Tan bringing the philosophy behind going to school. Children, make sure that you go to school, because it teaches you the disciplines that you're going to. I love that. Look at that. We're learning something.
Am I getting paid for it? I'm just joking.
Okay, well, that's the show tonight. Thank you so much.
Hey, Philip, I got to ask you, as a comic book collector in the Philippines, did you get the bootleg ASM 300?
By the way, this
question comes up
all the time.
I can't afford most of the books I wanted. Like, I think
The bootleg copies?
No. They're all overpriced. I remember when Youngblood came out, and everyone was obviously fighting for it because it was a popular book.
Mm-hmm.
And the shop that I go to only carried so many copies, and they were gone. And I think I got into a fight because someone promised to sell me a copy, and one thing led to another, and I think it didn't happen. I forgot what happened. I got beat up too, so it wasn't
No. Like Ferdbird the Nerd, I don't know of anyone that has that ASM 300 Philippines edition. And see, AJ's on the hunt.
So I've seen it. I know someone who has it.
So
I don't
printed that. Is it Marvel?
No, it's a bootleg copy.
So it's a real bootleg copy.
Yes, I've seen. I've seen one, and he won't sell it. So
it's not Marvel. It's Marvel, right?
Yeah,
it's like it's.
I forgot what it looked like. I'll text my buddy to see if it's his brother-in-law. I'll see if I can get a picture and I'll try to show it right now.
Yeah, I would like to see this, Philip. So from creating your own work to drawing somebody else's thoughts and putting them on paper, how important is it to stay in communication with the writer when it comes to bringing their thoughts to life through your art?
Oh, absolutely. It's mandatory. It's beyond important to not just have a script in hand. I think maybe I'm a weirdo, that maybe I'm a little different, that I can't just take a script. I mean, I've done it, but after all these years, I realized that having the script will never be as good as you talking to the writer to get certain things, certain ideas, certain atmosphere, emotions that they needed. And again, I mean, I'm thankful and grateful for all the work that the writers that I've worked with, you know, but I think looking back right now, the only thing I want to do is something where either I write it myself or at least I'm talking with the writer and not just getting handed a script and you follow everything.
I can only imagine. I mean, that is pretty tough. They working off of just someone's thoughts and their script.
Well, I'm sorry to cut you off, but it's okay. I would imagine there are people who prefer that. There's nothing wrong with it. They don't want the extra headache of figuring out certain things. It just doesn't work for me.
AJ, you have something you want to show us?
Oh, you got sorry. I found a picture. I know it's very...
Does it look different?
No. So at the bottom, it says the best Atlas. That's the bottom, the little box, right?
Uh-huh. Awesome.
And then if you look right here, can you see that?
Number one,
Philippines.
10 pesos. Oh.
So there you go.
Why don't you just do it yourself? Like, get a cutout. It'll be a one of one.
And you know what? And then you put an acetate on it. Then there you go. Oh. Then you get an acetate on it.
Just not let me go there.
I mean, that's a bootleg anyway. Your bootleg would not be any lesser than his bootleg.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
And you would have a one-on-one acetate bootleg.
Oh, man.
And whoever buys it for a ridiculous amount of money isn't getting screwed over, because they should know this is a one-on-one something you created.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
It's their choice.
So, Philip, you were given some really good advice from Todd McFarlane when it came down to meeting your heroes, meeting people that you've been wanting to meet in the industry, where he passed on information to you from Frank Miller himself, and he gave you four pieces of advice. Number one was storytelling. Number two was storytelling. Yeah. Number three was storytelling. Number four and five, to my understanding, is storytelling right there.
Yeah, and you missed a sixth one, storytelling.
And there is that sixth one right there. How much of an impact did that information and that piece of advice will impact you when it came down to actually drawing the Book of Ronin 2 with Frank Miller?
You can't really quantify it. You can't really put it in a specific form of detail on how that affects you. But it's more like putting your mindset in a certain state that regardless of how frustrated you are of not achieving certain things, like, I mean, you know, working with Frank, there's so many things that he does that are only done by geniuses. Mm-hmm. And for there are a lot of stuff that I don't get or understand, but instead of obviously getting frustrated with it, even if you are frustrated, you just have to find ways to learn and hopefully get those goals, like every single goal, storytelling goals that you want, at least working with Frank. So you know, what it really does isn't like there's X amount of, like there's no specific details that made me do certain actions that leads to learning certain things. No, it's I think it's just a mindset. Because when freaking one of the most important creator that on the planet, and one that I absolutely, you know, idolizes and respect, tells you how important it is to learn from the other legend, you do that. You don't question it. You know, and frankly, if I never met and worked, and I would imagine, you know, a Frank's way of teaching me, study under Frank, Todd would be the best teacher I've ever learned from.
Can you explain, well, a couple things. How did it come about that you're able to work on this book? Do we need to read the first book as well?
Personally, I don't think there's anything I can do that will make my book better than the first book. So I would biasly tell you that you have to read the first book.
Okay.
And, you know, it's a continuation of that story. Mm-hmm. So the experience will be a little different if you don't read the first book. But I do think leave it at that. You have to read the first book.
There you go.
Okay.
There you go. That way Uncle Frank is happy with your choice. Yes, you're forcing everyone to read books so that way they can read books. Uncle Frank is happy. I like that. So no, going
and,
into
you know, the reason I got to do this is I was doing my own thing, and I was planning some I was supposed to work on Spawn to come back to work with Todd. And when this came up, I asked Todd and got his blessing, and it's like, you do everything you can to learn from Frank.
Oh, wow.
That's awesome. Yeah. Like when a legend, actually when an icon tells you, no, you need to go talk to this legend. I mean, you have a trail that people only wish they can have. You literally stepped into the ring with Jim Valentino, Jim Lee, with people that you grew up reading. Like, you met your heroes, you got to work with them. Your line in the comic book industry is just absolutely phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal.
Thank you. I think I'm very, very lucky, very fortunate to have all those experiences and opportunities. You know, hopefully I did not give them shame, you know. Hopefully I did decent enough, but every single one of those, you know, are priceless for me. Those experiences are priceless.
Let's
you
talk
know,
about
and again I'm sorry and just to kind of finish that point, eventually it's going and this is where my mindset is right now, and what Frank is kind of guiding me to is, eventually you want to be that in Frank's perfect world, comic book artist has to eventually evolve into a writer artist.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I mean, this is coming from one of the best writer artists in the world too.
And if not, then you're just, no, I wouldn't say just, but then you should be happy as an illustrator, because to call yourself a comic book artist, you have to create, build the world.
Oh,
you know, yeah. And at least that's his biased opinion. And that's my biased opinion now too. I'm sure there are most other there's probably gazillion artists who disagrees and believes in other, you know, mythologies, which is not wrong. They have their own their own goals and agendas. But again, biasly, this is what I think is the path, is the right path. Like, my right path is probably not everyone's right path.
Right.
But look at your path. Frank Miller, Todd McFarlane, Jim Lee, Valentino, all the Image guys, like that, that is a path that everyone's just going to wish they can be a part of.
Yeah, growing. I really am very lucky. And you know, I think there's only like two Image founders that I have not worked with. One is Eric, and hopefully I can remedy that sometime. And Mark. But you know, Mark, I think he's back drawing Batman, right?
He did Batman. He did a Batman Joker
book. Is it done already?
Oh, yeah, Mark Silvestri? Yeah.
And it was that was actually a fun read. It was great, great art too.
Yeah,
I think he's going back to doing the darkness. I think there's something coming up with the darkness that he's going to be doing. And then don't worry about it, Philip. We'll make sure that Mark contacts you. We'll have our people contact.
That sounds great. Make it happen.
Don't worry about it. And Eric's a little good longtime friend. We can get you connected with him, no problem.
No, but I love all my heroes, you know, people that you grew up idolizing, you know, their art, their creative, you know, products, their stories. I mean, I don't really care whatever, like, modern fans or older fans that complains about the Image books.
So did you start from all the information that I was gathering about you, did you start reading your comics in the 90s when Image was formed? Was that like your time?
It was a little earlier than that. I started with manga, you know, Astro Boy.
Oh, nice.
You know, with the Hong, and then the Hong Kong comics, because they were cheaper.
Yeah.
And I don't have to save up for them. My dad reads them, so I'll get whatever my dad have. But comic books, I think it first started with a friend bringing his Batman and Outsiders to school. I didn't know what they are. And he was super nice, kind enough to let me, you know, obviously he's a wealthier kid, so he can afford those. So he let me borrow the entire, I don't remember, like 20, 30 issues of Batman and the Outsiders. Thankfully, I didn't damage them and return them. In good shape, and
even back then it was keep them in as pristine as possible.
Well, you know what? Actually, I didn't have the concept of collecting things or keeping things in mint condition. No, I just feel like it's the right thing to do. You know, I don't want to I don't want them to suddenly ask me, you know, and I have to be a slave for the rest of my school year or something. but I mean, joking aside, that was the first time I've read that, and I started to save up to be able to afford a few books, and it was Jim Valentino's Guardians of the Galaxy. So that was many years after that I decided that okay, I can finally save up some kind of money, so I get to buy one book a month. And that was you know, Jim Valentino's Guardians of the Galaxy. And I remember wanting all these other books that are more popular, but I can't afford them. So I figured, oh, you know what? I'm gonna buy the Marvel Universe handbook, then I'll get more stories in one rather than you know, each and every single book. At least in my young brain, that's how it was processing, and that's how it started. That's how I started, you know, my love for comic books.
Did your dad's influence with reading manga, was that at all any sort of influence?
He wasn't reading manga. He was really just buying the martial arts books.
Oh, okay,
gotcha. You know, and manga was from school. We have a library with there's a lot of manga in the library, and the martial arts books just happens to be another form of graphic storytelling.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So I'm glad that you brought up the Outsiders. Is that something that you and your dad read together? Correct?
No. I wouldn't call it reading, because back then I don't know half the book, you know, vocabulary that's in the book, and it was mostly just looking at the pictures.
Still, nonetheless, you still had them in your hand, you were reading. How was it when it came full circle and he told your dad, hey, dad, you used to read Outsiders. We used to do, you know, and now I get to draw the Outsiders. Did you, what was that reaction?
I don't even think he remembers what I read as a kid, because he wasn't reading them, that's for sure.
Because you ended up doing the art for Outsiders. I did. 2010,
I did a good run.
Yeah,
I think I did a good long run with Dan DiDio, actually. And that was funny because Dan needed an artist to draw the Outsiders. And when he was writing, he was going to write it. But he was not going to write any kind of full script because he didn't have time to. DC was moving from New York to Burbank. So there's a lot of traveling for him. And most artists, that wouldn't work out if there's no script. But it worked out for me because what I did is I would meet him at the diner in Burbank once a month, and he would act out whatever is going to happen in the book. You know, it's kind of like the Marvel method. And that's how I remember. I think it was like 11 issues of Outsiders. Mm-hmm. So all of that was done that way.
So he would fly from New York. You guys would meet at a diner. He would act out what needs to happen, and you would just bring that to paper.
Yeah.
And, hey,
yeah.
This is
well. What... I mean, he didn't fly from New York for that. I mean, he got his Burbank stuff that he needs to do, all the important DC stuff, and I would find a free time from him to get the script, to get the plot. Yeah.
Just go with the fact that he came from New York to see you. It sounds cooler. It's okay. It's
all right. Let's do that.
Let's go. Yeah, we'll go with that. Philip, now, I know you grew up in the Philippines. You mentioned that you grew up in the Philippines. And coming from, you know, typical traditional Filipino families, typical Asian families, they want their children to be successful. They want them to be lawyers, doctors, nurses, things like that. What was the reaction when you told your family, I'm not going to pursue this career, I'm going to get into comic books?
I think at that point, it was a little too late that they weren't happy, but there's nothing they can do. My dad was very supportive, though. I mean, I think my dad and my brothers were, you know, they were supportive. They want me to pursue whatever dreams I have. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I owe everything to my two brothers. They
That's awesome.
When I left, they were like, well, we'll take care of mom and dad, you know, just go. I mean, most siblings wouldn't do that, you know.
Yeah.
So that was very fortunate that they were supportive that way.
Real fast. So any tips that you can give, you know, there's a lot of kids out there that have that issue of finding it tough to tell mom and dad, I'm not going to pursue what you want me to pursue. I'm going to pursue what I want to pursue.
I'm the worst person to ask that.
I think you're the expert to ask this. Is it a bad influence, though?
Anything I say, it's going to be bad influence.
But it might be good information.
You know, there's no guarantee. Going, you know, being a doctor is gonna guarantee you more success than comic book artists. You're gambling with both. Yeah, you can, with their argument, say that there are more examples of successful doctors. But I mean, you know, I'm sure all the medical students will tell you how much debt they would have to go through before they start to have a good life, and maybe not a lot of them end up being, you know, pursuing that.
To add to that, I actually have a friend who is a doctor, and I remember talking to him, and he had said that if he could do it all over, he wouldn't have done it.
So really, follow in Philip's footsteps. follow.
Hey, I don't want to be responsible for that.
No. Look, it's a good thing because, look, you went to school and you pursue a dream, and look what you're doing. You are making a living doing what you want to do as opposed to what mom and dad wanted to do, because technically it's your life. It's not mom and dad's life. Yeah, they would have wanted to be proud of you to, you know, it's more bragging, really, you know, in a household. Yeah. My son's a doctor. Look at him. He's a doctor who has $400,000 of debt, you know, but there's a title And that's what a lot of the older generations don't understand. It's that right there. But, we have a question. Oh, go ahead.
Philip, I was wondering.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
I was wondering, so when you made that decision to come out here, I mean, you had something already, like, in the works, though. It wasn't like...
Yeah.
So you, I mean, it's not...
I guess that was a little misleading, what I said earlier, but I was already on the X-Men.
Yeah.
And it was just hard, you know, I mean, literally, that was the dialogue, that, you know, the internet was dialogue. Mm-hmm. And it was very hard to get the files, mm-hmm. you know, over. And communication with the editors was, you know, there's no messenger or whatever app you have to FaceTime and or Zoom. So it was very difficult when we have problems. It takes 2 days for the back and forth with the time difference and all that. So the best thing for my
the
for
only
my
option yeah
at that point was to move here.
Yeah.
No, I get it. That's hard. Blue Hillian Comics has a question. As an artist that has done several Spawn covers, what are some of the things that you love about doing Spawn?
Huh. The cape?
Oh, that's iconic. Let's think about this real fast. How many comic book characters have a cape that's iconic?
I mean, right? You know, you really only have two. But I think the best thing about Spawn, and to a certain degree Batman, is how much you can hide in the cape so you don't have to draw.
And there's another tip right there, kids. Work smarter, not harder. That right there.
I disagree. I mean, that's actually not working smarter. If you're doing it correctly, you're working harder. Because I don't know if you've ever seen Mike Mignola draw. You see all that simple lines and all that heavy black shadows and direct to the point line weights. The underdrawings of that are heavily rendered pencils. And then he comes back and carefully pick the right lines to use. That's his, you know, that's the genius of Mignola.
Yeah.
So you're saying Superman should have a longer cape?
The who?
Superman, maybe they should make his cape longer then.
I just... Okay, there are a few characters that I probably don't enjoy drawing. It's mm-hmm. it's the one that's it's most of the characters that are bright and shiny, I don't like drawing them. Like Superman, Captain America.
Yeah, they're too happy.
Because
they're
happy. They have to look perfect. And
gotcha.
And I think perfection equals boring to me, at least.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Oh, okay. No, I get it. That's there's a cleanliness to those two, and you sometimes you just want to get your hands dirty.
You can't hide your flaws. You can't hide your whatever thing, whatever part of the body that you're bad drawing. You can't hide anything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's talk about some things that are coming up here, Philip. So after the 6 issues of Ronin Book 2 are done, what's next with Frank Miller? Can you talk about it?
No, I cannot, unfortunately. We have a project going on in the plans. Hopefully he'll still have me. I don't know yet. Knock on wood. But you know, we have a project going on that's brand new. It's a brand new property.
Oh, nice.
And I get to kind of write the majority of the story this time, and I guess it's the next step of my studying under Frank.
Mm-hmm.
So he's gonna guide me. He's still gonna kind of like co-write it with me, but this time I feel like I'm getting the opportunity to kind of world build and carve my story.
That's amazing. Like, you're not you're not working for.
I mean, Frank. Again,
you're working with.
It's not Frank. Guaranteed yet.
Right. Yeah.
But still, he like just the idea of working side by side with, as opposed to underneath or for. It almost sounds like you guys have like a nice symbiotic partnership when it goes into possibly creating this new property. And the way you're explaining it to me in my ears, it sounds like you guys are going in together as a team, as opposed to, hey, this is my project, you're my team. And that sounds fantastic. That sounds amazing.
Frank is a very generous teacher.
I and love boss. It.
And boss.
So a comic book worm, he just wants to let you, he wants you to know that the first three Ronin 2 issues were fantastic. He loved
thank
it.
You.
Joseph thank Michaels, you. Hey y'all, what's going on, Joseph? Thanks for coming by right now. You've been working hard, and I'm sure the family deserves a break. Philip, where's the next vacation?
No, I don't know. Well, most of my trips involve some kind of convention. Uh-huh. And it becomes partly vacation, but not exactly.
You're still working. So when you go on vacation, you don't work.
Well, I don't think there's ever going to be a time where comic creators just go on vacation. I'm sure there are some. You know, mm-hmm. there are creators that are insanely well off and they can afford to not work. But even those people are probably doing some kind of drawing or creating when they're on vacation. And I'm like that.
You just can't shut it off, can you?
I can't turn it off. That's one thing where my wife would probably want to change.
Do you get inspired like when you're out like in another country?
Absolutely. I love being in Japan, you know, with all the cultures and other things that I get to see there. And I'm starting to enjoy the resorts and whatnot mainly because of my 5-year-old. But I still find myself trying to create, draw, write, whatever, you know, on the trip. So
gotcha.
Gotcha.
So sorry, to answer your question, not anytime soon.
Well, we have a couple of questions out in the audience. They're pretty similar. They pretty much want to know any conventions coming up in the East Coast, or are there any conventions that you like to promote?
I do have a show next month in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be at the Baltimore show. That might be my last U.S. show. And then I'm attending a convention in Japan end of the year around New Year's Eve.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's
it's probably my favorite show on the entire planet. I've never attended the Great Angoulême in France or the Luca show in Italy or some other big name European shows, but with the ones I've attended.
Yeah.
And then mainly because I don't have to work as hard as San Diego Comic-Con.
Oh, my God. So this is my first year at San Diego Comic-Con. Oh, my God. That is such a monster of a show.
Yeah. Well, if you attend this show in Japan, it's 700,000 crowd.
That's bigger than San Diego.
And the Artist Alley is composed of 6,000 exhibiting creators.
Wow.
And that's probably a very conservative number.
This is in Japan, and this is around New Year's.
Yeah, and that happens twice a year.
Twice a year. Babe, we're going to Japan.
Is it New Year's? Is it comic book artists as well as mangakas?
In Japan, fanzines are allowed. So technically, you can sell like a Dragon Ball fanzine at the show, but you can't sell it anywhere else. Not online, not at the store, nowhere, not even in your garage. But if you go into the event, you can sell it there. It's for research purpose.
Oh, that's interesting.
But then again, you can't really expect people to buy 20,000 copies of it because they're you know, you have to hand sell them over there.
So traveling to Japan, now one thing you have to understand about me, Philip, I'm the food guy. I also have a foodie channel. So going to Japan, what dishes are you just can't wait to have? You're like, oh, yeah. You land in Japan and you're like, oh man, I need to have.
That's the biggest misconception you'll ever get from social media or YouTube or all these places, that the only thing you can get in Japan are sushi. That's silly, no. And that's ridiculous because there's so many good food over there. And I hate it when people use "I don't eat raw fish" as an excuse to not go there.
But for you, what's the one dish you're like, I'm in Japan and we're going to have this? What's the one dish that you look forward to every time you go to Japan?
It's either a really good tempura.
Oh, nice.
Or sukiyaki.
I can only imagine the tempura. Like, they have just special shrimp over there in Japan. Well, that's just, you can't get here.
And then, the way they prepare their food is a little different.
Yeah.
A lot of the eggs itself, you can eat them raw.
Which trips me out. Yeah, that's very true.
And I think certain parts of Europe, you can also eat the eggs raw.
And apparently it's more buttery than the ones we have here. Yeah,
I think the reason you can't do that here is because of salmonella. And mainly because I think the companies in America wash the eggs.
Yeah.
So you lose some kind of coating that's supposed to protect the egg. And you can and because of that, you have to put your eggs in the fridge, right?
Yeah.
Eggs that are not washed can last in room temperature longer and are safer to eat raw.
That's how it is in Mexico too. You can get when you go to Mexico, you can go to a convenience store and they don't put their eggs in the refrigerator like what we do because they don't wash them like we do.
Yeah.
They leave them like out in the, you know, just regular dry storage. It's crazy. It threw me off too. I want to try umori rice. Have you ever had umori rice?
Yeah. There's so many things that you can try. But you know, for me, it's really the whole pop culture, you know, the mangas and animes and the art tools that I can get, you know, I think there's a place in Japan called Sekaido. And if you're an artist and you don't go there, then it's like you never being, it's like you believe in Islam and never been to Mecca.
Because I was going to say, that's probably like Mecca for artists. Yeah.
That's like 5-6 stories of art tools.
I can only imagine. So speaking about food, Evil Fett Cosplay wants to ask, what's your favorite Filipino dish?
I mean, it's so easy to just go with the regular kare kare and all these other things. I don't know if it's 100% Filipino, but in the Philippines, I love this dessert called Sans Revol.
What's it called?
What's it called?
Sans Revol. It sounds very Spanish or Spanish Filipino. And it's a cake that's mostly made of butter. Almost no flour.
Wow.
No nothing. Like 80% butter.
I'm looking this up.
One of my favorite things.
It's buttercream.
I think you can get it here, but I think most of the ones here, for some reason, just tastes too clean for me.
He's looking for that griminess. He's looking for that griminess that only the Philippines
and,
has.
No, it wasn't that. I mean, you can go to like a Starbucks over there, and the Sans Revol will taste different because most of the coffee shops would have that. It's like I think most bakeries would have that. Well, I don't know about the mom and pop bakeries, but
this one, yeah.
Yeah.
Sans Revol.
Oh, I think I've had that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sans Revol, made of nutty merengue layers, creamy French buttercream filling, and a crunchy.
Yeah, but see, it's so different. Like I've tried so many different ones here, and they just don't taste the same.
It's just like
it could be the water. It could be the.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
It could be the butter that they use. Could be maybe they use 100% margarine. Who knows? when I'm eating that, I don't look at the ingredients because I don't want to look at the
You don't want to look at that. Yeah, exactly. So now, you know, let's go ahead and start wrapping this up right here, Philip. Just a few last minute questions right here. Are you able to talk about any exclusive covers that might be coming out in the future that maybe sneak around?
Wait, most of the Marvel covers, they don't really let you talk about them until they do their solicitations. I do have a X-Men related cover with like 91 characters.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know when that's coming out, and that's all I can say about that.
Double page or
is this a giant,
or will it be like two issues?
So no, we got questions. Like there's questions now.
I actually don't know for sure if it's going to be a cover or if it's something that Marvel is using as a poster. I don't know the details.
Wow. So, Philip, on this show, let me go ahead and train you. So if there is something that we ask and you're unable to answer, giving us a completely blank face is okay. We peg that term NDA face from John Jane because we've asked him in the past, like, so what else are you gonna be drawing, John? And it puts him up against the wall. He's just like, has this look of, I cannot answer that. If you give us a blank look, we will consider that an NDA face, and that's okay.
I actually don't think people need to do that. I mean, you can just say, oh, I have this thing for so-and-so publisher. I just can't say what it is. I mean, that would have been the easiest way
to
go around.
I think it's just funnier when they just give us a blank thousand-yard stare.
I don't have a blank face. I think I'm probably going to look bad, you know, trying to come up with that forcefully.
We work on it because you're going to be coming back on the show here in the future. So work on your NDA face.
Oh, I'm having fun, you know.
Final question I have for you. Is there an update with that Mark Guggenheim project?
I was going to say, so Mark's a dear friend. It's one of my favorite thing when we chat about the story that we're doing. But, you know, he got tied up with all the TV and Hollywood stuff that he's going, you know, in the last so many years. You know, he's a big Hollywood creator. Yeah. And I had to pursue all these important bucket list things. And you know, he understands, but we're still slowly chipping away on our little project. You know, I think it's something that's very personal to us, and hopefully it does come out.
Are there any other creators? I mean, I know that you're working with Frank Miller, but are there any other ones that you have not yet collaborated with that you would like to at some point?
Well, I mean, I don't think anyone would say no to like Alan Moore or like Neil Gaiman or whatnot, but those people are probably very busy with their Hollywood life.
Hold on, let me go ahead and call Neil for you real fast. You know what? I have him on speed dial.
Actually, I don't think Alan Moore is like doing anything Hollywood. He really is just like, I'm doing the art that I want to do, and that's it. But anyway, like one of my heroes is Jeff Loeb. You know, I mean, hopefully one day, you know, Jeff is a friend, but I know he's also super busy.
Have you ever worked? I'm just kind of curious. Mm-hmm. Have you ever worked with any stuff with Mark Millar?
No. I don't know him personally.
Oh,
Mark Miller.
Because like, is it Miller or Millar? I thought it was Millar.
Miller. Yeah, I've always thought it was Millar.
Miller.
Miller.
Yeah. Miller.
Oh, okay.
Miller.
Yeah, because we put the wrong emphasis on the wrong syllable with that one right there. It's Miller.
I thought it was the same for the longest time until you know, friends would correct me. Like people from that place, that's how they pronounce their name.
Gotcha. So what I do if we have a guest and it's hard for us like to pronounce the name, like I would actually go through YouTube and, you know, YouTube their name to see how people pronounce it, and hopefully I can catch them pronouncing their name. Like the, for example, the artist for Daredevil with Chip Zdarsky, right? Marco
Checheco. Am I saying that wrong?
Wrong. Kaketo.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So like, and this is like, I had to YouTube it. So that's one thing that I do is I'll YouTube like people's names. It's Marco Caicedo, and I've heard him say it like that. So okay, we're going with Caicedo. So like, same thing with Millar.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
Yeah, I've always thought it was Millar too, until like one day I ran into like an interview that he was doing, and they're like, "Oh, so this is Mark Miller? Hi, yeah, I'm Mark Miller." I'm like, "What? Your name sucks. I thought it was Millar. I don't like you no more."
Much more glamorized, right?
Yeah.
And I'm only asking because like he's doing like I think Big Game and Nemesis, and I'm like, I just recently read Big Game and read some of the new Nemesis Reloaded. I'm like, man, if you were to get on like that like Nemesis book, if there's any more, I'm like, your art would be amazing on that book.
Yeah, I mean, those guys are superstars, man. I'm the guy from the corner.
You
don't even say that.
We're gonna make you a star.
Oh, see, you're lying. See that?
Whoa, something just fell. Oh no.
Okay.
Are we capturing this? Did you have like some kind of supernatural phenomenon on?
Yeah, there was like a thick balan or Aswang back there. Just went ahead and just attacked me. There was a kukui back there.
You know, Wills actually lives 5 minutes away from me.
Really?
Yeah.
So that's
you should
funny.
You should get him online. You know. Trust.
I've asked him actually.
So hard to get Wills. I saw Wills at San Diego Comic Con. So check this out. After the San Diego Comic Con, I ended up going to the Lumpia Factory to meet up with people from another comic book company, and I ended up seeing. Basically, I ended up seeing the person that I was looking for. I introduced myself, said hi. Literally, I was talking to her. Wills was right here, and I was trying so hard not to fangirl. I was trying so hard to be like, "Oh my god, it's Wills! Can I just touch your hair?" You know, I was doing my best.
Wills is super down to earth, man. I'm sure he'll. Well, I can't speak for him, but I'll ask him.
He seems perfect. Like I would love to have Wills Portacio on here.
He's one of the most like I think we lost touch for a long time until I moved here and became neighbors with him. and
the closer you live, the further away you guys get from each other. Yeah,
you know, and we kind of reconnected, and now I, you know, it would be like, did you lose power? Is power back in your place? Or like, okay, Wills, I found this really good candy bar. You want the bag? I'll bring it over.
So one day,
because both of us are. We're not supposed to have a lot of sugar, you know, like, you know, pre-diabetes and all that stuff. But I don't have that now. But for a while,
you can have all the candy you want.
Yeah. So when we find things that we can eat that are safe.
You guys, I like that. So like in our group of friends, like whenever someone has gout or they have their gout attack, like we start sharing medicine amongst each other also. Like I feel it, man. That's a friendship thing. That's a bonding thing. And that's awesome that you can do that with Wills.
Well, it's kind of like in the medieval times when they all talk about whitening, you know, like the royalties whitening their screen, not knowing that it's all lead.
It's yeah.
They all go the same way. Okay. Probably not a good analogy.
I like this guy. This guy, you need to come back. You need to come back, Philip.
I'll come back with
Will. So, that would be perfect. Let's do that.
You guys heard it here first.
And I can just enjoy the show.
We'll just have a good time.
He actually loves chatting. He loves chatting. Loves entertaining people.
He needs to come on board with us. We're Filipino.
I don't talk as much as he does.
I would love to just have a conversation.
I'm nowhere as entertaining.
Yeah. No, you're good. You're good, Philip. So before letting you go, I have 10 rapid fire questions. Sure. I do want to ask you. These are 10 questions to get to know Philip, the man behind the artistry. And it's simple questions, but you need to answer them as fast as possible. Putting you on the spot, Philip Tan. I just want to know.
Sure. Try my best.
Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Ready? Go. Pancit or chow mein?
Pancit.
Favorite junk food?
Chicharron.
Putting on your pants, do you put your left or your right leg first?
Right.
Coke or Pepsi?
I don't drink cola much. Okay, Coke.
Coke or freshly
packed? I actually don't know the difference between the two, but okay, I'll just
put one. I'll go with it. I'll go. Do you drink beer?
Not really.
Not really? Okay,
coffee. We're skipping it. I drink a lot
We're skipping that question. All right, coffee. How do you take your coffee?
Black.
Black. All right. A freshly snow-packed mountain or pina coladas on the beach?
The what? What's the first one?
A freshly snow-packed mountain or pina coladas by the beach.
Beach.
All day. Look at them. Favorite home-cooked meal, and you better say your wife's.
Huh. That's the hard one. That's actually is a hard one. Salmon?
Okay, okay, that's a good one. I know we kind of touched upon this earlier. What's your favorite baseball team?
I know nothing about baseball.
Okay.
Whatever's closest to San Diego or LA, I'll go with that.
Okay. Favorite basketball team?
Lakers.
Oh, and now what's the one thing you get asked to draw the most at cons?
It's either Psylocke or Wolverine.
There you go. That was 9 rapid fire questions. But see, that's good because we get to know you a little bit better, that you like Bunsit. You are a Southern California sports team guy. You don't drink soda or beer, and you'd rather hang out on the beach with the pina colada. Philip Tan, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Before letting you go, let everyone know how they can find you on social media.
I'm on Instagram. I'm on Blue Sky now because whatever that bird thing already died. I'm on Facebook. Just Philip Tan or Philip Tan Art. That you're probably, if not one of those two, then that's probably not me.
And is your commission list currently open for anyone who's looking forward for anything like that?
No. Unfortunately, I am beyond pack. I mean, I do take like a handful when I attend shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure if I'm already filled up for Baltimore, but they can go on any of my social media. My reps contact info is there. They can inquire.
Okay.
Perfect. AJ, it's been a while, man. Let everyone know how they can find you on social media.
Hey, I just AJ the Comic Collector on Instagram. And I always obviously I have the other Culture Geek Network, but that's still in the works. And personally, I'd like to say, Philip, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
You know, it's been a pleasure. We definitely want to have you back. And hopefully, this will be we'd like to have you back sooner than later. Let's put it that way.
And with or without Wills, we're asking you to come back. Now, if you bring Wills along, we get it, but we want you because you're our friend. You're our friend, and we put you first until we meet Wills. But we put you first, okay?
Wait until you guys meet Wills, and you probably would forget about me.
We will never forget about you, Philip, I promise. And then everyone out there, you guys can find me on E-Man's World of Geek on TikTok, Instagram, and on YouTube, as well as here with the C-List Villains podcast every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Pacific time, only here on YouTube. Remember, C-List Villains, cultivators of the comic culture. Philip Tan, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. You are more than welcome to come back. AJ, I miss you, buddy. I'm glad that you're back right here. And to everyone out there out in the chat, thank you so much for joining us. And we will see you next time.
Peace. Thank you. Good night.
Thanks again for listening to another episode of the C-List Villains podcast. You're cultivators of the comic culture. Make sure you follow us on Facebook and email us at clistvillains@gmail.com. You can also leave us a voicemail or text us at 209-975-7597. Be sure to join Luke Week's Facebook group, Rare Keys and First Appearance Comics. And you can follow us on our two Instagram accounts, clistvillains and clistvillains podcast. Lastly, follow the villains on their separate IG accounts, at Luke Weeks, at C-List Villainous Red, at C-List E-Man, and I am at AJ the Comic Collector. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you all next episode.